for Cloak and Dagger Season 2. So excited. Last season on Cloak and Dagger, Ty and Tandy got their powers, found each other again, got embroiled in a whole mess with Roxanne, saved the city of New Orleans using their, you know, Wonder Twin powers, and also met a detective, Bridget O'Reilly, who has since gained her own set of powers. And now we're starting season two, and it's just as exciting, just as intense, just as kind of depressing as first season, but in the best way. I am joined by my co-host today, the Doctor and Parrish. Doctor, what did you think of the season two premiere?
I think it was a good start. It was a good start.
Effusive as ever. Parrish, what did you think?
Yeah, I'm happy to be back. Immediately when I started watching the episodes, I had to, like, you know, put myself back in check and say to myself, you know, the first season was sort of a slow burn, and they, you know, continued the momentum in the same way that it did the first season. But I enjoyed it. Yeah, I think all the other stuff we'll get to once we start, you know, chopping it up.
Mm-hmm. So what has always been interesting about this show is how their stories connect, separate, you get both of their perspective, and then also how they tend to change places. So last season when it started, Ty was, you know, coming from this like upper middle class background. He, you know, very much so a good kid in sports, and living a pretty decent life, except for this death that happened, his older brother dying, and that kind of just hanging over the family. And then Tandy had run away from home because her mom was addicted to pills and her dad was dead, and she was living on the streets and stealing. And now they've switched places at the beginning of this season. Ty is on the run because they think that he killed the officer from last season who was corrupt. And Tandy's now back at home and she's doing ballet again. And her mom are going to therapy for the abuse that she didn't realize had been happening to her mom. And that was part of the reason why her mom was on the pills. So it seems like everything is good, except they're both lying to each other.
Well, also, they've switched places, but they're still the people that they are. And so both of them are ill-equipped to deal with their new circumstances. So, like, Tandy, you know, when her mother tries to connect to her, you know, like in a family, granted, she's kind of going a little overboard, she runs away, and Tyrone is just not street smart at all. So, like, they don't have the skill sets for their new realities.
Yeah, that's a good observation. I mean, because mom is really Dr. filling it up.
Oh, yeah.
I love Tandy's mom. She's one of my favorite actresses. Yeah, she's really... You know what I loved is that she admitted to herself that she's so good at rationalizing things that she was even able to, like, rationalize why she lied to Tandy about her dad. You know, she's like, oh, yeah, I read once that girls who grow up with an abusive father end up picking abusive partners. So that's why I continue to lie to my kid. And that's why I did drugs, so that she wouldn't realize how much pain I was in. And I was like, that's a really deep, self-reflective, like, look at yourself, like a really good examination of yourself. And I think that just goes to show how far Tandy's mom has come since last season.
I also think it says a lot about the care in which they've approached the topic of domestic abuse, unlike some other superhero shows that we watched and are no longer watching. just the whole situation with, you know, Tandy dealing with her mother and then with the other young lady that's come into the support group in the way that she completely botched that whole situation up. I appreciate the fact that, you know, they have a superhero character, but they're acknowledging that there are certain things that superheroes just can't punch their way out of.
And I think that's what's always been interesting about Tandy's character, because her powers, you would think, in terms of like the light that she's able to generate and being able to see people's hopes, you would think that her powers are very good. And, you know, just how we associate things like white, light, you think of like peace and happiness. But Tandy is angry. And she doesn't know how to deal with things.
And it's causing her powers to backfire on her.
Mm-hmm. It's like Tandy creates daggers with her light. That's her go-to. And I think more than the comics, I think the show does a really, really good job of layering that meaning of like, what does it mean for this girl to be able to produce light? But when she does, she produces knives. And like, she even says to Ty, like, how am I supposed to help? Like, all I do is make knives.
That's a good point. Cause I mean, like, generally, if you think, you know, thinking about sort of like, you know, your standard art, you know, role-playing game where, you know, your light wizard tends to be a healer and your dark wizard tends to be like offensive weapons, and they've totally reversed that, and they are kind of going in, they're doubling down on that. Like, you know, she has the quote-unquote light powers, but they're offensive. He has the dark powers, and they're, you know, they're basically defensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Ty's whole thing is he's trying to figure out how he can, like, he's trying to pop in on these drug dealers and he's stealing their money and their drugs to keep it off the streets. But also his thing is he's always trying to figure out how to get away. He's like, how can I figure out how to transport someone so I can save someone? Mm-hmm. He's never like, you know, like, you would think he's in that church all day with nothing to do. You would think he would get at least a beanbag and like practice some boxing. Mm-hmm. But Ty is not a fighter. That is not who he is at his core. So Tandy is struggling with going back to ballet class. And I love this Debbie Allen teacher that they gave her, who is not with the shits. She's like, you're late.
Welcome back, but be on top of it.
Exactly. You're late. Your tendus are off. Stop trying to impress me. You don't need to kick your leg up high. I need you to do it right. It's like, damn.
A young lady that has had no structure in her life since she was a kid.
Mm-hmm. And it's perfect. It's, you know, she's struggling with, how do I be normal again? I'm so used to running around and scamming people, and you kind of see like that's where she excels, and she immediately falls back into it, just like running away. Like, those are her defense mechanism. And then like Ty is such a nerd. He's studying. He's having her steal his like homework notes and syllabus so that he can still keep up with his studies. I was like, this giant nerd. I love him so much.
But you know what? This is another thing that I can appreciate about, you know, Ty's character and going to a Catholic school, because going to a Catholic school is an incredibly regimented reality. And so, of course, he would try to structure his life as much as possible. So that was something that I appreciated as you know, someone who went to Catholic schools.
That was so cute. He had his little study area with his books. He's so Ty all the time. It's adorable. And even when they finally come to the realization, or, you know, finally own up to the fact that they've been lying to each other, that Tandy has been using this group, like, yes, she's going there with her mom and she's getting the therapy, but also what she's been secretly doing is punishing the men who have hurt these women. Mm-hmm. And then Ty's been running around you know, stealing things from drug dealers. So when they finally admit it to each other, it's a really intense scene. These two are so good, the actors, at playing off of each other. And when they argue, I get hurt because they know the buttons to push with each other.
They're going for the kill.
Like it is painful. It's like, Mom, Dad, please stop fighting. Like, y'all don't want to hug? Like, nobody just wants to hug, make up. So, yeah, like, they do this whole big analogy to energy, because the title of the episode is Restless Energy. And the whole thing is that they saved this city. And then their lives were changed forever. But also, they don't know what to do with that. And all that energy has to channel somewhere, because it doesn't go away. And they're channeling it in all the worst ways. And they think they're being helpful, but they're making it worse.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Doc, I have a question for you. Okay. So, at the beginning of the first season, you kind of needed a little more convincing about the chemistry between these two characters.
Friends.
Okay. I was just curious if that had changed at all.
Nope. Okay. So much so, I was excited to see him and Evita kind of reunite.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will never stop shipping Ty and Tandy.
I like Ty and Tandy together, but the chemistry to me is more sibling based than romantic based. And I know that's the direction that the show will probably go, and that's fine, but I just don't see it.
You just don't see it. Okay.
I see like both.
So do I. Like, there were moments in these two episodes where I thought, I can see them getting together. And then there are other moments.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. That was it.
I cut you off. That was rude. I'm sorry.
No, there were other moments where, you know, I definitely saw more of a sibling, like, you know, relationship there. But that's it.
I was going to say is, I'll own that part of it too, is that I know they're of age, but they're playing 16-year-olds, and I have a grown child now. So to me, I can't, maybe my mind just won't let me go there, just because I'm like, okay, if they get together, I don't see it, but okay. There's no investment in it, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
For me, I see there's something about when Ty looks at her where he's just like amused, but also like delighted about her. Like, there's something about her that brings out a different side of Ty that I see some kind of like romantic chemistry there, but definitely that's not something that I'm like, oh, like just kiss. Like, usually when I'm like super shipping someone, I'm like, oh, like, when are they going to kiss? It's so adorable. But like right now I'm just like, oh, they're cute. This is subtle. I can see it building. And I do also really like Evita.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as the show doesn't do something weird, like where all of a sudden she turns evil, I can see that developing as well. Because right now she is like that grounding force that Ty kind of needs.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like, and I think maybe that's also where I'm seeing the romantic chemistry between Ty and Tandy, because Tandy is like, she's like just, she's so much that she brings out like a fire, like a kind of passionate side in Ty, whereas like Evita brings out like more a quiet side. So it's kind of just like always what he needs in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, goodness.
But for me, it's like, you know me, I'm always, I fall back on my ships that I'm already in love with. like when she told Ty to take off his shirt and his face was like, what? And she's like, I'm not interested in you like that. And he took off his shirt and his little chest. Oh my God. I was like, Ty, You could have took off your shirt. It wasn't much to see.
Well, it's the same thing that happened with Evita. Yeah. He just seems a little bit, but quite a bit modest.
It's because he's a nerd. Mm-hmm. Love that about him. And then I also love when they were walking into the club. And he's like, you just like walked past all those people in line. Like, it's just like, Ty keeps forgetting that Tandy's biggest superpower is her white womanhood. My homegirl is like, I own everything I walk into. I love her so much. So all of that is happening. Ty is feeling this guilt because he keeps trying to help and he's actually making things worse. And I love him, but I need him to get over it, because he's one of those, like, every time he tries to help, he does make it worse. But then he keeps doing more to help because he's trying to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
It's just compounding. And it's, like, very, very frustrating. So I can see why O'Reilly is like, I really need you to just stop. And what ends up happening is the gangs try to sit down for a meet. And Ty and Tandy are going to record it. So they're in the club. And actually, this is one of my favorite parts of the first episode. They're just dancing in the club, having a good time, because they have to wait until the meeting is over to get the recorder anyway. And they're looking towards the room where the meeting is supposed to happen. And all of a sudden, you just see a dude fly at the glass.
And his brains stay on the glass.
Exactly. I was like, I had to rewind it because I was like, wait, what? Somebody got shot in like their head. But then I realized, no, it was a whole ass body. Oh, I love this show. So they go into the room and everyone is dead. Every single person. So now they're standing in a room full of dead bodies and they don't know what to do. And they call O'Reilly. And immediately I was like, O'Reilly did that shit.
Yeah. We'll get to this. But yeah, I don't know much about Mayhem, I'll admit. So this is kind of fresh ground for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't quite expecting it to turn the way that it did.
So I think the twist that they're doing is that they're actually two separate, like it's literal split personalities where they become two separate people. I think in the comics, it was more of a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of thing.
Yeah,
that's
which
something I was coming across, though, with her, the way she murdered the ambulance driver.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought it was until I realized that they were legit separate at the end.
Right.
Like Mayhem had tied her up in the house.
Yeah, so I wasn't expecting that. But then, I mean, and it makes sense because, you know, not to assume that there's, you know, a huge crossover between the audiences, but you know, they've done the Typhoid Mary thing, so mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of odd to do the same vein of villain on two different shows.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if we'll actually get to see it, like we'll actually get to see them separated, because it doesn't feel like they've been separate the whole time. It mm-hmm. feels like...
I thought that was the what happened at the end of last season caused them to split off completely, because she got caught in it.
But yeah. Then, so it didn't feel that way just because I was wondering then what has the other one been doing? Because it seemed like she took over, like, or took her place when homegirl was losing it after the crime scene. And then she, like, went back in pretending to be her. So I'm wondering, like, if it did happen at the end of the last season and they've been completely separate, because it's been 8 months. Evita says that it's been 8 months since she's seen Ty. So I'm just like, have they been completely split for 8 months? So what was the other one doing the whole time?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that that question is off base. I mean, I definitely paid a little, because I went back and rewatched the episodes, and I paid a little more attention to, like, the differences in O'Reilly from scene to scene. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like initially they were the same, in the same physical space, but they were two different people. Like, I walked away with, like, at the gun range, was that Mayhem shooting the gun?
No,
that was definitely O'Reilly. And then also when Ty pops into her car in the first episode, that was definitely O'Reilly as well. Because she was terrified and she was taking pills. So I also wondered if the pills were, like, I thought the pills were like she's addicted or something like that. But I was wondering if maybe the pills were to, like, suppress the other personality from taking hold.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We didn't see Mayhem until we saw her in the puddle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was the first time we see Mayhem completely separate.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if it's just like they're together and then something triggers the split. And then they come back together. Like, yeah. I wonder if we'll get to
see that.
You know
how you solve that problem, right? Kill the host.
I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's what's, I like how when you do it, it's just like, oh, it's just speculating. When I do it, all of a sudden, I'm evil for, like, talking about folks need to die. Anyway.
I think there's a difference between somebody who is, you know, who has evil inside of them and just letting, like, 20 teenagers die. Mm-hmm. I'm just pointing that out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, whatever. What is interesting talking about the layers of meaning is when Evita's aunt, the voodoo priest, like, she talks about the symbol that the man draws as he's dying, and it's Mama Bridget. So I looked it up. So it's this show, they do such a good job of weaving, like, the New Orleans stuff into this story that was never, like, the Cloak and Dagger stories always took place in New York. So the way they're able to, like, layer this stuff and layer the meaning of it. So the cop's name is Bridget O'Reilly. Mama Bridget is Aloha, who is Aloha of death and revenge. She's also the only white Loa, because she is a New World Loa that comes from Irish and Celtic mythology, as well as, like, basically traced on to the Haitian mythology. And she's the wife of Papa Legba. Mm. And it's just perfect, because not only is the character supposed to be Irish, but I believe the actress in real life is Irish as well.
And you also go back to the duo from the first, one is always white and one is dark.
Dark, yeah.
I'm confused. I don't remember seeing the actress that was Mama Bridget.
No, the actress that plays the cop, O'Reilly. So her name is Bridget O'Reilly. And in real life, I think I'm pretty sure she's Irish in real life as well.
Oh, okay. No.
And then also this, so Bridget is based on two things. Mama Bridget is based on two things. The Saint Bridget from Catholicism, who is, most people think, they're not sure if that was a real person or if it was just that, because there was a goddess Bridget in Irish mythology as well. And so some people think that, like, the Saint Bridget was just a priestess of the goddess Bridget, and then they just, like,
the history of Catholicism is oftentimes they would absorb the the religion of the people that they were, you know, kind of, you know, converting, mm-hmm. and then they would become saints. And then there's the whole, you know, transatlantic trade and how the Yoruba people's religion kind of melded into that as well. So yeah.
And then Bridget is also a goddess who sometimes is known to have three aspects, like, similar to, like, the Norns or the Fates as well. Mm-hmm. And so it's just interesting. It's like this goddess is both related to like Haitian and then like Catholicism and pagan, and also having the different personalities. So I just think they've done a really good job of connecting all of those things to this character who now has like split personalities.
That's interesting. Like I had never heard of Bridget before. I'd heard of Papa Legba before. But again, it goes back to the first season with the light and the dark of the duo. Mm-hmm. They're basically the reverse aspect of that. Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, that's some really good writing.
This show, y'all. I know not a lot of people are watching it, or probably not a lot of people our age are watching it, because it comes on Freeform, and it's about two teenagers, and you know, people have their things about like, oh, that's for kids. It's kind of how like people didn't go see. As many people didn't go see Into the Spider-Verse because they assume it's a cartoon, it's for kids. Good writing is good writing.
Right.
Right.
And this is just good writing and it's good storytelling. So I love everything that they're doing. And then they kind of have wrapped all of this in a more traditional Cloak and Dagger storyline, where we see that there's this bigger conspiracy going on of these gentlemen that were all killed in this meeting. One of them, they like look him up, they identify who he is, and they're like, he's just a businessman. Why was he even here? And then it turns out that he had a secret business where people were parking private ambulances in his parking lot near the docks. And that ends up wrapping back around to the story of these missing girls, these girls who have gone missing in New Orleans. And one of them ends up being one of the girls from Tandy's group. And so it just pulls the whole story together. And you know what? I love the scenes of Tandy and group, and like, I know she's wrong, but also I felt her. I understood why she yelled at that woman.
Like I said, I like I kept thinking about Black Lightning when I watched that scene, and I appreciate it contrasted to the whole thing with Thunder going in and beating up an abuser. And this was much better. This is much better written.
So here's what I will say. It was acted well, and I'm glad, unlike Black Lightning, they recognized that this was Tandy really projecting her own issues onto someone else, that every person has to find their way out in their own way. You might see it, but they have to get to the point where they can see it for themselves. All you can do is just be a shelter when they're ready.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just going to stop there.
So what I like about it is that it should never happen. Like, totally, that should never happen. You do not go off on somebody who's been abused like that. But I think we've all had that moment when you like see somebody who can help them, or like who has a support system and they're not helping themselves out of the situation. So it just felt like cathartic, even though you know everything she's doing in that moment is wrong.
I appreciated her mother more than Tandy in that situation. Because I think her mother said the things that needed to be said, which is basically, you have cut her off from a place that could have given her a line, you know, when she was ready to leave. Mm-hmm. It, you shut that off. And now, you know, her abuser doesn't have to try. You've mm-hmm. isolated her.
Yeah.
I appreciated that more than I appreciated what Tandy did in the support group.
Agreed.
because that's the reality. And that's the thing that pissed me off about Black Lightning. Like, you can't just walk in to, you know, and beat up the abuser and all of a sudden everything is fixed.
Yes.
That's not how domestic abuse works.
See, and I think that's why I liked it, because you got, something just got caught in my throat. You got both. You got the cathartic moment, and then you also got everybody being like, that's not okay. That's not how you handle it. So it's, you got that balance, which I appreciated.
But can I ask, cathartic for who? And
right.
Was that catharsis needed? It doesn't matter what the person outside the situation feels.
Oh yeah, so no, totally.
For me, I'm not the best person to have this conversation. So
yeah,
it's not because Tandy is the character that we're following. Like, that's who I'm talking about. Like, that's who got the cathartic moment, and then. And then she got called on it continuously afterwards, which I appreciated. Whereas, if we're comparing it to Black Lightning, in that situation, it's like you have this character, Anissa, she has this moment, and then everything is fine afterwards. It's like, I'm okay. I guess, like, for me, it was like, okay, I'm glad that we got this, because, like you said, it was Tandy projecting, and then nobody letting her, no one let her get away with it.
Mm. Yeah, but I think, I don't know that we want to continue here. We've got lots of other show to talk about, but I think the problem is that, you know, I read Anissa and Tandy in very much the same vein. In both cases, it was an exercise in privilege. I think there's an extra annoyance to me in Black Lightning that the writers allowed her to get away with it. Whereas the writers did not allow Tandy to, but I just didn't read it as cathartic at all. I just thought that I understand the anger and the frustration. And I get that part of that is projecting her own personal circumstances, but at the end of the day, I just read it as really an exercise of privilege. And that is I think that's an ongoing thing that Tandy has to continue to grapple with. You know, like you said, her biggest superpower is that she is a white woman. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that allows her to view the world in a certain way. Whereas, you know, you are where you are because that is your choice and not necessarily a function of everything else that builds into what you are. You know, it was the same conversation with the drug dealers. You know, she said, well, why don't we just let these people do what they want to do? And Ty was like, well, people don't choose to suffer.
That was next.
So, I mean, you know, I get, you know, we all look at these scenes, you know, very differently. And I think there's a lot of things that shape, you know, those viewpoints. It was really uncomfortable for me, to see Tandy do that. And again, I appreciate that the writers had the presence of mind to repeatedly let her know that shit, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. I think for me, it was also very uncomfortable in the moment. Like, the whole entire moment, I'm sitting there going, don't do this. Don't do this. Don't do this. Don't do this. But I do think maybe cathartic isn't the word. Maybe it's just like the fact that they illustrated that, because that is how people feel when they see someone going through stuff. They're like you leave. Like, that's how people feel about it. They're like, I don't understand why you don't just leave. Like, just leave. And so her, like, expressing that and then nobody letting her get away with it, just to me, was just a really great illustration of how we have to, like, break that down. Like, yeah, and part of the reason Tandy feels that way is because she has not experienced the abuse, but she has experienced the repercussions of the abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So I think also in that way, like how she was feeling was valid in that moment. Because she's looking at her life like, we could have had a totally different thing if you had gotten it together and left.
But again, that's her side seat driving.
And oh, yeah, no, totally.
That's really what hung me up on that.
Yeah, so the girl that Tandy is fighting with or having problems with in the group.
Mm-hmm. Michaela.
Michaela. Yes, I was about to say her name. Her name is Michaela.
Sorry.
She also turns out to be one of the girls who goes missing. And we haven't exactly figured out. I'm assuming some sort of trafficking based on what happens. Like they take her and they drug her and they're transporting these girls in these private ambulances.
I'm wondering, though, if it's something more sinister because she wasn't gone that long.
I was wondering if they were going to do something to her, but because Ty popped into the ambulance, the guy just dropped her off at the hospital.
Drugged her up and dropped her off.
Yeah, so that she wouldn't remember what happened.
I didn't even consider that. Okay, yeah, that's a good point.
Because they said that the other girls have been missing for like a long time. And also Tandy connects with, I'm only mentioning him because I looked on IMDb and I'm pretty sure he's going to be in episodes for the rest of the season. There's a woman who runs her therapy group that's played by Dilshad. Not going to butcher this woman's last name. but I know Dilshad mainly from that TV show Greek that used to be on ABC Family. And then she introduces Tandy to another social worker at the center played by Brooklyn McLean, and his name is Andre.
I hate to say it because I forget that, you know, lesser shows would do this. I'm like, watch Andre be a part of this shit. And I'm like, please don't make Andre be a part of this shit.
Yeah, no, I hope not. He seemed really cool.
I know, right?
Oh, see, now I'm all like, no. Now I'm already thinking bad thoughts about this, but no.
Yeah, let's hope not, because not everything has to connect.
I'm hoping.
Yeah. Hoping. Oh my God. Yeah, don't do that. No, show, don't do that, show. Because that would be like messed up if like all of a sudden it was like, you know, actually he's funneling these girls like straight to that. That would be so messed up. Yeah, so he's like a failed, I said it so roughly. He used to be a musician and, he had really bad, migraines and then had to stop playing music because he wasn't able to do it without health, issues. And
did you notice that he's limping?
He was limping. Thank you.
Almost prosthetic leg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's an interesting character, and so now that you've made me like think that he's sinister, I'm like, and he has a limp.
You're welcome.
But yeah, he seems like, you know, he's like one of those like knows the community, is helping people. He seems like a good guy so far, but now the doctor has made all of us suspicious of him.
God damn it. Because he has the perfect profile. The sinister dude, because they generally are the pillars of the community.
Start off all nice and caring, draw you in, and then hit you up.
I'm not. Okay.
You are welcome.
No, we both going to be mad if he turns out to be evil.
I'm going
to
be so mad.
We're going to light you up on DM.
You heard it here first, people. So
that is a theory that I do not want to be true. Usually I'm with you, but no, not this one. Like, not another brother. Damn. But yeah, so that, those are kind of the players for this season. You have the social worker and the therapist. You have they haven't brought back in. Oh my God, I'm so horrible because I'm not gonna remember her name yet right now. The scientist from last season, whose dad.
Oh yeah, she was in the preview. I think when they did the season preview after the second episode, she was in it. So we'll see her again.
Yeah. So they haven't brought her back, but the bee lady. Yes, the bee lady. It's funny because I was just looking at the episode title, is Colony Collapse. Okay. Yes, the bees. Mina Hess. So they haven't brought her back, but I'm assuming she'll be back this season because I think she got boosted up to a series regular. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
And then we have Mayhem and whatever is going on with Ty and Tandy and her mom in the group. So somehow all of those things are going to connect, I'm assuming, also to what's happening with the drugs on the street. And I don't know. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say, I trust the writers. I mean,
no, I'm excited to see like where this is going to go. I even kind of feel like what we'll get, like, I don't know if this thing with the girls is going to be like a season long thing. Cause it definitely feels like the pace is a little bit faster than last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this could just be like a half season mystery or something like that. But I think that the big thing is going to be also how do we get it so that Ty isn't stuck in that church?
Yeah, because with the copy, yeah, that's going to get old fast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And also she kept mentioning, because she's like, are your fingerprints on this stuff? Because you're already wanted for killing a cop. So you probably shouldn't have your hands all over drugs and drug money.
Right. He did touch that tabletop, by the way, when he was grabbing the recorder. I peeped that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, none of them went, What is it with television characters who are doing shady shit, but nobody ever wears gloves?
Hello.
You can get a bulk box of them gloves from any store.
Like $2. For like $2.
Right. All you got to do is go to CVS, man. I know they got CVSs.
Hey, he could pop in and out of CVS.
You got to pay for it.
I know you asking Tandy to pay you to bet you could get away with the thieving a lot faster, easier.
It's ridiculous. So yeah, we have to get it so that Ty is not a fugitive anymore.
No, but that raises an interesting question because essentially they're in the comics, they're runaways. So will he go back home or will they both end up
running away together?
And then they keep teasing the idea that there would be some sort of a crossover between Runaways and Cloak and Dagger. And I know that the new season of Runaways, one of the writers said that it was going to be more firmly grounded in the cinematic universe. Mm-hmm. Like, so I'm wondering, you know, where what direction this is going to go.
I mean, right now they're across the country from each other, but it would be really interesting to see that come together. And Ty can go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's learned how to take people with him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. Yeah. Because it took Runaways 2 seasons to get to the point where they're actually running away.
It didn't take 2 seasons. They ran at the end of the first season. Stop.
Yeah, but they didn't really go nowhere. And that's the same thing with Ty right now. It's like you ran away like a neighborhood over. Like that's not running away.
What are you expecting to do?
It's like people are like running away. It's like, actually, I'm just 10 blocks from where I live.
And as a 60-year-old, that's the kind of running away I expect. That whole trope of kids getting on a bus and going from New York to Canada is some bullshit, yeah, for the most part.
It is very true. I love the little Ty's spying on his family and like thinking that they've all like moved on without him. His face when Evita told that guy to walk away, he was like, he's like, my girl.
Thank God, I still got a chance.
Yeah. He's like, that's my girl. That's my girl. She didn't abandon
me. My favorite scene that entire night was when Evita's aunt made the prayer to Papa Legba. He was like, I'm just doing this to protect you. From what? Then Evita walks in.
I love it. I love when she walks in too, like, ooh, we making biscuits?
Right.
I love her.
Lost her entire appetite.
And I just love that she called him on her birthday. She was like, 8 months. Eight months. Like, you can send a letter. Use it. And then she finds out, like, he can pop in and out of places. You telling me you can pop in and tell me you're still alive?
You would have been better off. You would have been better off not showing her that trick. Because exactly. That just made it worse.
No, he can't win. He is
he just revealed that at any moment he could have shown up and told her he was okay. That you would have been better off saying nothing.
Exactly. When that happened, I was like, that's a.
So he just dug an even deeper hole.
He didn't. Dog.
And when she realized, because he was like, oh, I came because I had a question. She was like, so you actually didn't come to tell me that you were still alive. So it actually wasn't even. Oh, okay. All right.
See, this is youth and not being married. sometimes you just gotta take the L.
The last thing I wanted to talk about is the music, which continues to be amazing.
Absolutely.
They pick. When I tell you this show picks the best music, and like it's either like the tempo or the lyrics, something is just resonating with the scene every single time. So one of the songs is called Moray's Choir. And I was like, Moray, like, that sounds really familiar. And I looked it up, and that's another name for the Fates. And I was like, that, like, who is, I need to know who the music supervisor on this show is. Because it's too good.
Also, because, you know, when I was maybe a little bit older than them, certainly, in my early 20s, you know, I was really obsessed and still am to a degree now with electronic music. And at that time, I was really into trip hop and down tempo electronica and all of that. And the sounds from these two episodes really sent me back to those moments. Mm-hmm. Definitely sounds updated because it's 20 years later, but definitely made me, you know, think about some of the songs that were really dear to me at that moment in my life. Mm-hmm. And even in the club, like the style of house music they were playing when that whole thing in the back room went down, like that was very similar to the style that I would go to clubs to hear.
Yeah.
So it was just, yeah, it really took me back in some ways.
So also in the second episode, there is an original song by Aubrey Joseph, who plays Ty. Yes.
What?
So in that scene where him and Evita are fighting, that's him in that song.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah.
Homegrown music that doesn't sound like shit.
Well, in the first season, Olivia Holt had a song that she did for the show.
Yeah. And again, original music that doesn't sound like shit.
Shout out to God.
When the hero, he was black. He said, this is for the streets, black lightness. I don't know why hating on whoever works on that show's nephew just because they put him on every single soundtrack.
I'm sorry. I was sick during that last Black Lightness show, so I apologize for the delay.
Sick in air quotes.
Mm-hmm, sick. Didn't show up.
I, Look, I have the FML paperwork. I can send it to you all. I need y'all to stop giving me a hard time. But I'm sorry for the delayed shade or Black Lightning. I'm still really pissed off at that show. So I apologize.
Aubrey, I was listening to it and I was Shazamming and Shazam wasn't giving me anything. And I was like, this sounds like Homeboy. So I went and Googled it. So the track is called Numb. I don't think they have it on Spotify yet. There's another during that scene where like Tandy is kind of going through it and seeing her dad. There's a song called I Know Your Secrets by Katie Garfield. Just always the song just accentuates the scene in such a good way. The original soundtrack, like the score, is done by Mark Isham, who has done music for Cloak and Dagger, in addition to Once Upon a Time, Black Mirror, American Crime. Like he's like really prolific. He's done a ton of stuff. Every scene.
It's so good. I'm surprised, though, that you said it's not on Spotify, because I remember with Agent Carter, there was a track that I believe that was really an original to the show. When Peggy went to the nightclub, I think it was I can't remember what the name of the scientist was, what his name was.
That show, oh my god,
and they released that on iTunes.
I'm gonna look right now. I'm wondering if it is on iTunes. Because now that
it just seems like very sorry,
no, go ahead.
It seemed like a very non Marvel thing to do. They're very good at like that sort of synergy. Mm-hmm.
But I think, that's why I'm checking to see if it is on iTunes, because I think now that iTunes has Apple Music, sometimes they will release stuff on Apple Music that you can't get. Yeah. So there is, let's see. I'm looking to see if it's there right now. I know this is scintillating listening for those of you at home. as I look something up. No, I don't see it.
I keep it real with you. No.
Well, because I feel like when Olivia Holt's joint was out, that did come drop on Spotify. So I'm kind of surprised. But maybe they'll do like a... Ooh, here we go. Cloak and Dagger. Nope. I don't think they have like any of the season 2 stuff up yet. Just season 1. Mm. We do have some commentary on the old Facebook. Because I actually got a feedback post for once. Go ahead.
Oh,
sorry. I thought somebody was saying something while I'm pulling it up right now.
I had it up if you want me to start.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Anton. Hey, Anton. I did not expect that time jump between seasons or that O'Reilly would be back in the Force. I originally thought that she would be MIA by the time the season started, much like Connors was. It will be interesting to see how high up the trafficking plot will go and what's going on with O'Reilly, especially with the mayhem stuff being different from the comics and how it ended up related to Ty and Tandy's powers. Marion says, I had no idea O'Reilly and Mayhem would be like two different people if the same body. But I love how they show Mayhem just being a fuck you, I'm a do this my way. How did Evita know what Tyrone's... There's a lot of typos. How did Evita know what Tyrone...
That Tyrone said, I think.
She just walked in the church like, I'm sorry, let me help you. Where Tyrone stayed.
Ha ha.
She had seen him there before. Remember last season right. She visited him there.
Yeah.
Like took her there, so.
So this is my thing. If Evita really thought that Ty was missing for 8 months.
Why didn't she go there?
Why didn't she go there before?
Although, in my boy Ty's defense, maybe she did and he poofed out.
But all his stuff would have been there. She would have saw all them books and St. Sebastian stuff and been like, this nerd is here studying.
But that could have been left over from his last visit. Yeah. I got an answer for it all.
I'm like, I'll let you have it. I'll let you have it. Because I love the writers, and I'm going to let them have that too.
She could have dropped
a couple. I might have missed it, but why or how is Tandy losing control of her powers? Her emotions, the stuff with her dad. That's why she's keep having these flashbacks of seeing him and freaking out. She gets scared or frustrated and lights and electricity just shorten out. Those are heightened emotions. Those are intense and heightened emotions.
So the other thing I think that we didn't really discuss, but it's important to, given where Tandy is now, is the fact that the whole first season, she was driven by this need to find out what happened to her parents and to, or happened to her dad, and to clear his name, because Roxanne had trashed his name and blamed him for that explosion. So that was her driving force. So if we're also talking about restless energy and energy being channeled in a way that's not productive, it's like she was channeling her energy and she was able to control her powers because she had a purpose. And then at the end of last season, she found out that the whole thing that had been driving her, clearing her dad's name because he's a good guy and he needs to, you know, be vindicated, she found out that he was actually an abuser. Mm-hmm. So it's like, now not only does she not have a purpose in terms of like how and where to use her powers, but the thing that pushed her to control her powers was her love for her father, who she's just found out is not a good person. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's the biggest explanation for why she can't control her powers anymore. And it's also, if you just always think of her and Ty as a balance to each other, Ty has become more in control of his powers as Tandy has started to kind of lose control of hers.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's all I got in terms of that question.
The other thing I wanted to just, since we were talking about Evita, to point out is that Evita has abilities that, you know, we never really figured out the explanation or the extent to, you know, to what they are. And I want to see that come back.
Give me more. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah.
So when, I believe it was Tandy that touched her and tried to get into her head.
Oh, and she was like, you know, bitch, no. Yeah.
Right. So Evita can do some stuff. We just don't know what.
I wonder if it's powers, in air quotes, or if it's just her understanding awareness. And awareness, yeah,
of how to navigate the supernatural.
Yeah,
but I think isn't that a power of some sort?
No, it's just an awareness.
Like, to me, it's like her aunt, like what she says when she talks about, that was a really great conversation too, what she says when she talks about prayer, about how prayer isn't about asking for help from something outside of yourself, but for you to be able to clear your mind so you can ask yourself what you need.
Yeah, I love that scene as well.
First of all, I just thought it was a great way to look at it as somebody who's not like super religious, but does believe in, you know, mythology and spirits and things like that. I thought it was a really good way to talk about faith. But also, I think Evita has that, and that's why she's able to ground Ty so well, because she understands that, like, she understands how to, like, listen to herself and how to hold herself against these things that might be happening outside of her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fair.
Jen's gonna love me for this. It's like the boys from Supernatural. They have no abilities to speak up, but they know how to navigate the spiritual and supernatural realm.
I accept everything you say about I've never seen an episode. We've had this conversation before. Whatever you say about this show, that's the gospel law for me, and that's what I'm gonna tell other people.
Good. What I will say about that in relation to Supernatural is, like, I think it's like the awareness and the belief. Like, once you are aware that those things exist in the world, and then also you have the belief that you, like, you believe enough to know what you should be afraid of and what you should guard yourself against, that in itself is having power over to be able to navigate that. And that's basically what that Supernatural show, that's what they do.
Okay.
Because, good. Like, in the first couple seasons, they don't know.
I am never going to back-check you guys. Yeah. In 15 seasons, I am never going to back-check you guys.
Because isn't that, like, the whole thing in the first couple seasons is, like, Sam, like, doesn't really, really believe, and Dean is like, nah. And it's,
yeah,
like...
He believes. He just doesn't want to be bothered with it.
Yeah.
Because he feels like it destroyed his life and his childhood.
Yeah. Because, like, he knows it's, like, real, but, you know, but he also is kind of, he's skeptical. Like, that's, it's like that.
No, you're not.
Mulder Scully thing.
He's not skeptical in the existence of the supernatural. He's skeptical in as much as, why does it always have to be them fighting it? Mm-hmm. So no, he's not skeptical. He knows what's out there. He knows what it is. He's just like, why does it have to be my problem? Why can't I just live a normal life?
I wouldn't. I'm never going to go back and watch that show. I'm just not. Like, I love it. Maybe I'll watch the very final episode or whatever episode Jeffrey D. Morgan comes back for before then.
He's coming back for the entire last season.
Is it next season that's going to be the last season? Like, uh-huh. Not this current season?
Correct.
Yeah, I'm not going back to that show. I thought he was like gonna come back for like an episode before the season ends. I was like, just let me know which episode to watch for Jeffrey D. Morgan. Cause he's fine. I also like the person who plays young Jeffrey D. Morgan, like when they go back in the past.
Oh yeah.
He is also fine.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Doc got me when we were talking about the show, and she said that God was a villain in one of the seasons and it wasn't the last season. And I was like, that's it for me. I don't know.
Like, yeah, like, how can it get worse than, like, God is, like, the actual thing.
God's,
like,
sister. God's
literally sister. Where do you go after God?
God's sister, not God. God's sister.
Okay. The family, though. It's like,
oh, speaking of gods and angels and all that, Lucifer is coming back soon on Netflix. I am so juiced for that.
Listen, all the Netflix money, none of this pesky censor regulations from network television.
It's going to be a
get
mess.
Get body with it.
It's going to be a mess. Did so you watch when Trisha Helfer was on?
Yes.
I've been watching that show over my wife's shoulder, and I'm mad at the entire Twitter. I can't remember her name right now, but there's a real hottie on that show, and nobody told me about this, and I'm mad at it.
Everyone, like, seriously, everyone on that show is gorgeous.
The one that's the demon that always wears the leather outfits?
Yes.
Oh, Maz.
Mm-hmm.
Maz?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Maz Keen, yes.
Leslie Ann Brandt.
Mm-hmm. Also,
yeah, I'm mad at her.
I don't know if you guys know about, speaking of, like, hotties and Trisha Helfer, you know that she has a podcast with Mark Bernardin now, right?
Wait, what?
No.
So no. Trisha Helfer and Mark Bernardin have a podcast where they do an episode-by-episode rewatch of Battlestar Galactica.
Mm. Look at Mark!
Yeah.
I did not know that.
It's so good. There are, and they're already, like, super deep. Like, I think they're, like, more than halfway through season one.
What's it called?
It's called Battlestar Galacticast.
Oh, okay.
Yes, she
right always, now.
Yes, she always pulls me back in. Mm-hmm. It's like DS9.
Yeah,
I feel a rewatch coming on.
For Battlestar. It's been a minute.
That's a really good incentive to rewatch Battlestar Galactica.
That is the one show that I have in just about every format. I have it on DVD. I have it on Blu-ray. I have it in Apple TV.
Speaking of that and being old, I realized because I wanted to watch Clueless the other day, and I was like, I was like, why don't I own Clueless? And I realized that there's a couple movies that I do own. I own the VHS tape of them. So I have no way of watching them. And I never bought the DVDs. So now I have to go buy Clueless on DVD or Blu-ray so that I can actually watch it. It's a mess. We've been old enough to move from like VHS to DVD to Blu-ray. And streaming. anything else? I think what we're gonna do for this one is we're gonna let it build up another few episodes, so probably like 2 or 3 episodes, and then we'll come back and podcast those. So we won't be doing weekly recaps for this. But you know, we'll let you know, and we'll put up a feedback post when we're coming back. And I think I'm gonna do, at the very least, I'm going to try and like watch it once a week and like put up a post in the group so that people can talk about it. Cause I know like it's hard to remember after a couple episodes to put all your comments. But yeah, I'm very excited for this season. Is there anything in particular that y'all want to see?
I'm just trusting the writers. You know, I mean, it's a little bit different. You know, I've always gotten the impression that for Marvel shows, they feel the pressure. Like, you know, in early on in a lot of interviews, people would ask, well, how does this connect to the Marvel Cinematic Universe? And the showrunners have always said, we had to earn that, you know. So I've always gotten the impression that they are under pressure to release a good product because they carry that, even if they're not completely, even if it's not an obvious connection to the MCU, they still carry that brand. And so that gives me a lot of faith for all of these shows that I'm going to be entertained. Yeah.
I think for me, what I really want to see, and this is just my selfishness, but I think shows like this excel when they do it right. I love seeing them use their powers together. So I'm just really excited to see Ty and Tandy, instead of constantly going off on their own, I'm excited to see them figure out how to use their powers together. Because that's what I love about The Gifted, when all of them are fighting. And, you know, and that's why I love Avengers movies, because you get all of those superheroes together. And, you know, like someone's opening a portal and someone else is jumping through it and punching someone. And like, that's the only time I really get invested in fight scenes, is when people are using their powers together. So I would love to see more.
Yeah, I mean, but that's real though. I mean, that's an honest expectation you have, you know, for team ups. Mm-hmm. So,
but you would be surprised at the number of team up movies that don't actually do that. Looking at you, X-Men.
I was going to say they all come from the same company, so it's not that hard to isolate them.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. We will see you in a few weeks. Let us know what you think about Cloak and Dagger in the group, in the Facebook group, on Twitter. I love this show, and I could talk about it for hours, but gotta keep it moving.